Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram published Tuesday, June 28th. This is the oil page. Oil rises on fears of supply, possible G7 move, by Julia Fanzares, Bloomberg. Oil climbed as investors monitored developments from the gathering of Group of Seven leaders, and two supplier countries flagged potential output cuts because of political unrest. West Texas Intermediate rose to settle above $109 a barrel in a choppy session on Monday. The G7 is weighing a price cap on Russian crude. Libya's national oil signaled a potential dent in supply due to a worsening political crisis. Ecuador could halt oil production even quicker due to anti-government unrest, the energy ministry there said. Meanwhile, OPEC Plus will be meeting this week to discuss production increases. It seems most traders know more supply is coming, but very near-term demand remains stubbornly strong, said Dennis Kissler, Senior Vice President of Trading at Bach Financial. With the OPEC Plus meeting this week discussing production increases, it's keeping the market in a nervous trade. Retail prices for gasoline and diesel haven't fallen anywhere near as fast as crude amid a recovery of COVID-19 and a shortage of refining capacity to make fuels. Still, fears of a demand-sapping recession are keeping a lid on sustained price increases. Oil is heading for its first monthly decline since November. Meanwhile, the revival of the Iranian nuclear deal could mean that crude from the country will flow back onto global markets. Iran's chief nuclear negotiator and his U.S. counterpart are heading to Qatar in the latest attempt to revive the deal. G7 leaders and officials have been discussing a potential price cap on Russian oil, but an agreement has yet to be reached, according to people with knowledge of the matter. The proposed mechanism would work by imposing restrictions on insurance and shipping, they said. Protests could force Libya's national oil company to declare force majeure, a clause in contracts allowing shipments to be halted within 72 hours, according to a statement on Monday. Time spreads that traders watch as supply-demand indicators also remain strong. Second to third month spreads for both Brent and WTI are around the $3 a barrel mark, pointing to an urgent need for supply. The U.S. Energy Information Administration said the timeline of publication of its petroleum status report that was scheduled to come out last week is still unclear, but will not be published Monday. G7 edges closer to ditching its pledge to end fossil fuel financing, by Chiara Albanese, Alberto Nordelli, and Sammy Aldrini, Bloomberg. The Group of Seven is moving toward reversing a commitment to halt the financing of overseas fossil fuel projects by year's end, a proposal now viewed favorably by most members, according to people familiar with the matter. G7 leaders meeting in the Bavarian Alps are converging on a reference to the increased role of gas projects, a consequence of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, straining their energy supply. French President Emmanuel Macron was among those who supported financing of new fossil fuel projects during a meeting with the leaders of African nations on Monday, according to a person with knowledge of the talks. In the present situation, we'll have short-term needs that will require large investments in gas infrastructure in developing countries and elsewhere, Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi said Sunday. The aim should be to convert such infrastructure to hydrogen to reconcile short-term needs with long-term climate needs, Draghi added. Germany pushes for G7 reversal on fossil fuels in climate blow. An updated text of the leader statement shared with Bloomberg News refers to the important role of that increased deliveries of liquefied natural gas, LNG, can play in mitigating potential supply disruptions of pipeline gas, especially to European markets. Leaders acknowledge that publicly supported investment in the gas sector is necessary as a temporary response to the current energy crisis. If implemented in a manner consistent with our climate objectives and without creating lock-in effects, the text said. The draft wording in the summit communique, initially backed by host Germany, is gaining traction as Europe races to secure alternatives to Russian gas. The German government has warned that Russia's moves to limit supply risk a Lehman-like collapse in the energy markets, and Italy has rushed to sign new energy deals with African countries. A senior official at the French presidency told reporters that it was envisaged gas investments would be permitted in the short to medium term on an exceptional basis given the circumstances, while the overall climate objectives, as laid out at the UN COP26 summit, are maintained. G7 shift. A shift away from the commitment to end funding fossil fuel projects, firmed up as recently as May, despite the energy shock caused by the war, would still represent a setback to global efforts to fight climate change. Such a move would make it harder to rally the rest of the world around more stringent targets and to direct investments toward cleaner sources of energy. In the May commitment, G7 nations acknowledged for the first time that fossil fuel subsidies were incompatible with the Paris Agreement, but acknowledged that investment in the LNG sector was a necessary response to the current crisis in a manner consistent with our climate objectives and without creating lock-in effects. In a separate G7 declaration issued Monday and backed by partner nations, including India, South Africa, and Indonesia, leaders reaffirmed their commitments to keep the average temperature increase above pre-industrial levels to well below 2 degrees centigrade and resolved to pursue efforts to limit it to 1.5 degrees centigrade, the same levels agreed to in Paris and again at COP26 in November. G7 set to agree on exploring price cap, by Jordan Fabian and Jenny Leonard, Bloomberg. Group of seven nations are on course to announce efforts to pursue a price cap on Russian oil, U.S. officials said Monday, though there is not yet a hard agreement on curbing what is a key source of revenue for Vladimir Putin for his war in Ukraine. Russia's war and limiting its profits from rising energy prices have been the main topics of discussion so far for leaders gathered for 3 days in the Bavarian Alps. Bloomberg News reported Sunday that the G7 is discussing a price cap and that a potential mechanism would work by imposing restrictions on insurance and shipping. Negotiators, especially those from the U.S. and Italy, are seeking a system that limits the flow of money to Russia while allowing oil's availability to large buyers like China and India in order to avoid further price shocks. Yet the details of how a price cap would be implemented or what level it would be set are not expected to be resolved at the gathering. Instead, leaders will direct finance ministers to work on figuring out the details in the weeks and months ahead, a senior Biden administration official said. A political agreement to explore the option has been agreed, so it will be mentioned as an idea in the final communique, according to a G7 official. The U.S. has suggested the cap would work by applying restrictions on insurance and other services needed to transport Russian oil. The mechanism would allow oil to be shipped if it's sold below an agreed threshold. Such an approach would require the European Union to rework sanctions that were only agreed to last month after weeks of negotiations. It's also unclear how effective the concept would be. One official has said EU sanctions would probably have a bigger impact. I think the single biggest factor here is that this is not something that can be pulled off the shelf in a tried and true method that has repeated historical precedent and therefore can simply be taken as a standing option, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told reporters. Chevron to sell vast San Ramon headquarters, move jobs to Texas. By George of Avalos, The Mercury News, San Ramon, California. Chevron intends to sell its vast headquarters campus in San Ramon, keep its head offices in the same East Bay city, and shift jobs to Texas, a move that could deal a fresh blow to the Bay Area economy. The energy giant said it will cover relocation costs for some employees to move from San Ramon to Texas. Chevron plans to sell our Chevron Park campus and move to a new modern leased space in San Ramon, the oil titan said in comments emailed to this news organization. The location of the leased space wasn't immediately disclosed, other than it is in San Ramon. However, Bishop Ranch, an iconic mixed-use office, retail, and restaurant business park that's adjacent to the current company headquarters in Chevron Park, has the capability to offer modern office spaces for tenants. The current real estate market provides the opportunity to right-size our office space to meet the requirements of our headquarters-based employee population, Chevron stated. The move is expected to occur during the July through September third quarter of 2023, according to Chevron. Over the 12 months that ended in March, Chevron earned $20.51 billion on revenue of $176.84 billion. San Ramon-based Chevron at present owns an office tower in Houston that once was the headquarters of failed energy company Enron. Chevron is also planning to build another office tower in Houston. In 2002, Chevron moved its headquarters to San Ramon after it exited its longtime main office in San Francisco. Despite the shift of jobs to Texas, Chevron insists that it won't uproot its base in California. Chevron will remain headquartered in California, where the company has a 140-year history and operations and partnerships throughout the state, the company said.
Good morning, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, June 26th. Inflation sparks global wave of protests for higher pay, aid. The Associated Press. Rising food costs, soaring fuel bills, wages are not keeping pace. Inflation is plundering people's wallets, sparking a wave of protest and worker strikes around the world. This week alone saw protests by the political opposition in Pakistan, nurses in Zimbabwe, unionized workers in Belgium, railway workers in Britain, indigenous people in Ecuador, hundreds of U.S. pilots and some European airline workers. Sri Lanka's prime minister declared an economic collapse Wednesday after weeks of political turmoil. Economists say Russia's war in Ukraine amplified inflation by further pushing up the cost of energy and prices of fertilization, grain, and cooking oil as farmers struggle to grow export crops in one of the world's key agricultural regions. As prices rise, inflation threatens to exacerbate inequalities and widen the gap between billions of people struggling to cover their costs and those who are able to keep spending. We're not all this tough, said Matt Granger, head of inequality policy at anti-poverty organization Oxfam. How many of the richest even know what a loaf of bread costs? They don't really. They just absorb the prices. Oxfam is calling on the group of seven leading industrial nations, which are holding their annual summit this week in Germany, to provide debt relief to developing economies and to tax cooperation on excessive profits. This just is a standalone crisis. It's coming off the back of an appalling pandemic that fueled increased inequality worldwide, Granger said. I think we'll see more and more protests. The demonstrations have caught the attention of governments, which have responded to soaring consumer prices with support measures like expanded subsidies for utility bills and cut the fuel tax. Often, that offers little relief because energy markets are volatile. Central banks are trying to ease inflation by raising interest rates. Meanwhile, striking workers have pressured employers to engage in talks on raising wages to keep up with rising prices. Eddie Dempsey, a senior official with Britain's Rail, Maritime, and Transportation Union, which brought UK train services to a near standstill with strikes this week, said they are going to do more demands for pay increases over their sector. It's about time Britain had a pay raise. Wages have been falling for 30 years, and corporate profits have been going through the roof, Dempsey said. Last week, thousands of truckers in South Korea ended an 8-day strike that caused shipments delays as they called for minimum wage guarantees amid soaring fuel prices. Months earlier, some 6,200 miles away, truckers in Spain went on strike to protest fuel prices. Peru's government imposed a brief curfew after protests against fuel and food prices turned violent in April. Truckers and other transportation workers also had gone on strike and blocked key highways. Protest over the cost of living ousted Sri Lanka's prime minister last month. Middle-class families said they were forced to skip meals because of the island's nation's economic crisis, prompting them to contemplate leaving the country altogether. The situation is particularly dire for refugees and the poor in conflict areas such as Afghanistan, Yemen, Mandahar, Haiti, where fighting has forced people to flee their homes and rely on aid organizations themselves struggling to raise money.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, June 27th. Can you balance on one foot? The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. A few weeks ago, my dad, who turns 82 next month, mentioned that he had missed church that morning. For my dad to miss church, something is seriously wrong, so I, of course, asked why. He admitted he fell when he was walking his dog a few days before. When he fell, he hit his face and had some scrapes and a black eye. He told me he didn't want to go to church with a black eye. Sometimes it is very hard to separate the nurse part of me and the daughter part of me. This was one of those times. I was so relieved he had only minor injuries, but was also upset he didn't let me know at the time. Mostly, I was just scared, and in many ways I still am. The nurse part of me has seen more times than I care to count how dangerous falling can be. Same-level falls are one of the highest causes of accidental death worldwide. Very closely linked to fall risk is a person's sense of balance. So, in many ways, I was not surprised by a study published this week that linked balance to long-term survival. The study, conducted in Brazil and published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, found that the ability to balance on one foot for 10 seconds is a better indicator of longer life expectancy than aerobic fitness, flexibility, or muscle strength. It is such an accurate predictor that they found that people after age 50 who cannot balance on one foot for 10 seconds are twice as likely to die in the next decade as those who can balance unassisted. At age 50, only 1 in 5 people cannot balance for 10 seconds unassisted, but at age 70, the statistic flips, and those who can balance for 10 seconds are in the minority. Which makes sense if you think about it. If average life expectancy is about 79 years in the U.S., you would expect most people at age 50 to pass the balance test. But as we get within 10 years of that average life expectancy number, the ability to pass the test drops. What I like about the balance test is it's a safe as long as you have something or someone around to support you if you become unbalanced, and quick way for people and healthcare providers to assess a strong indicator of life expectancy. The other thing I like about this one is we know we can help people improve their balance with strength training and exercise and or physical therapy. It is one more thing that shows the human body was not designed to be horizontal or in a seated position most of the time. We were designed to move. And when we don't move, don't exercise, it has long-lasting ramifications at every level of health, and that adds up to long-term survival. There are several things you can do to improve your balance, whether you pass the 10 seconds on one foot test. Exercise programs that improve strength and flexibility are great ways to start. Yoga and Tai Chi are two exercise styles that have been closely linked to improved balance and a reduction in falls among older adults. Speak to your primary health care provider about gait, balance, and functional training with a physical therapist. Make sure you get your vision checked regularly. A mismatch between what your eyes see and your balance centers in your ears detect is a major cause of dizziness and can cause falls. Speak to your primary health care provider about your balance and other ways you can help improve it. Take precautions against falls if you do have poor balance. Make sure pathways are clear of clutter and well lit. Make sure you have non-slip mats or stickers in showers and bathtubs. Grab bars in bathrooms are a good idea as well. Wear properly fitting shoes with non-skid soles. Don't use objects not designed for standing on, for example chairs or boxes, to get to high places like cabinets or shelves. Remove floor rugs and any other objects that can easily be tripped over. Finally, consider using technology to your benefit. The newest generation of smartwatches have fall detection built into them and will call 911 and an emergency contact if they detect a fall and the person wearing the watch doesn't respond within a minute. There are Tai Chi and yoga programs that can be streamed directly to computers and smart TVs. There are DVDs available as well. Some of those programs are designed for people who are chair-bound or have difficulty standing. Those technologies mean people don't have to go away from home or find a specialized trainer to have access to those programs. Everything you do to improve your balance and reduce fall risk can make a big difference in the long term.
Odessa American, Inside Pages, Monday, June 27th. Why is my Medicare premium an extra $499? Dear Tony, my husband John and I need your guidance because I believe I've made a mistake enrolling in Medicare. Last year, John was laid off and lost his employer health insurance. I have enrolled in Medicare since I am turning 65 in August. John is a veteran and is receiving his health care from the VA, so he did not have to enroll in Medicare, and his health care is not costing us anything. Why is my Medicare costing me an extra $499 for Medicare Part A and $170.10 for Medicare Part B? I thought Medicare Part A was free. Is there a form that I did not fill out? I have not worked very much since we married 40 plus years ago and was a stay-at-home mom, and now I am the caretaker for our elderly parents. Please explain what I should do to correct my Medicare mistake. Thank you, Susan from Pasadena, Texas. Dear Susan, most Americans do not realize that they must work a certain amount of time and pay employment taxes to have Medicare Part A with no premium. This is what your problem is, and the Tony Says Medicare office can help you solve your problem. To qualify for Medicare Part A at no cost, you must have worked and paid Social Security and Medicare taxes from your payroll check for at least 10 years or 40 quarters paying taxes. When you sign up for Medicare Part A, if you are not working full-time with yours or your spouse's employer benefits, you may want to enroll in Part B, which has a monthly premium. The premium for Medicare Part A is $499 each month if you do not qualify for premium-free Medicare Part A. If you paid Medicare taxes for 30 to 39 quarters, not 40 quarters, then the standard Part A premium is $274 each month. Those who did not work or pay into the Social Security system for at least 10 years or 40 quarters and have been married for 10 years or longer should apply for Medicare under their working spouse's Social Security number that qualifies with the proper amount of employment time for Medicare. If one never married or lives with someone as a domestic partner and you did not work enough quarters, then you will have to pay for their Medicare Part A premium. My advice to you, Susan, would be to call your local Social Security office, since it is the government office which oversees America and Medicare enrollment. Explain that you have always been a stay-at-home spouse, but your husband has worked enough quarters to qualify, and you need to appeal your Medicare Part A premium of $499. Tell the Social Security representative that you are seeking premium-free Medicare Part A due to your husband having enough quarters. Social Security will look over both yours and your husband's Social Security accounts to verify that he has enough quarters to qualify. Be prepared to provide a certified marriage license showing you are married, and you will have to provide the original certified marriage license, not a copy, to that specific Social Security office. For Medicare enrollment questions, either call your local Social Security office specific 800 number or call the Tony Says Medicare hotline at 832-519-8664 for help. Tony King, Medicare author and advocate, is giving a $5 discount to the Tony Says readers on the new 2022 Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Book at www.tonysays.com. Have a Medicare question? Call 832-519-8664 or email info@tonysays.com.
Bowel habits should prompt a doctor visit. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 74-year-old male. I had open-heart surgery 1 year ago. I am currently taking several medicines, all for a year or more. About a month ago, I started having very hard stools, and they had become like different sized marbles. I have had no changes in my diet. Can a person's stool indicate a problem? DM. Answer, yes. A change in a person's bowel habits can often be a clue that there is a new health problem. It can mean an issue with the intestines and colon or a systemic issue such as low thyroid levels. Changes in diet or medication are probably the most common cause, but changes in physical activity can also cause hard stools. A recent study showed that 25% of people, one person in four, has had changes in their bowel habits related to the pandemic. For many people, changes like yours get better as mysteriously as they started. Even so, definitely make an appointment to see your regular doctor. In the meantime, increasing fiber through diet, whole grains and vegetables in particular, and water may be a benefit.
Granddaughter's behavior at funeral of Finn's family. Dear Abby. Dear Abby, our dear mother recently passed away after an extended illness. We all knew it was inevitable, but it didn't make our loss any easier. My siblings and I were devastated, and we still are. The day of her funeral was especially hard. One of our older daughters brought her children, our granddaughters, 13 and 19 years old, to the funeral. While everyone else was dressed appropriately, one of our granddaughters wore tattered jeans with a loose top that exposed her belly. When one of her uncles mentioned her attire, she snapped that we had better things to think about. I was very upset and wanted to yell at her to leave, but my grief overcame my anger. The whole time this granddaughter was there, she made sure everyone knew she was. I burst into tears, but that didn't seem to bother her. Rather than allow the family to grieve, it was more important to her that nobody was going to tell her what to do. I want to tell her how we all felt about her attire and her attitude. I don't want to ruin my relationship with her, but honestly, If another family member passes, none of us wants to deal with her attitude while we are grieving. How do I tell her how disrespectful she was and that the time was not for her, it was for us as a family to grieve? Signed, Still Sad in the East. Dear Still Sad, your granddaughter's behavior at her great-grandmother's funeral was atrocious. It was worse than her attire. The people who should explain proper attire and funeral etiquette to her are her parents, not you. Discuss this with them when you can. Do it calmly, since you and your siblings still are in pain and your emotions are raw. Dear Abby, I am a stepfather to 5 kids. 3 are over 18, the other 2 are young teens. I need help explaining to my wife the importance of having the younger kids take responsibility in life. Each time I start talking about it, she says it stresses her out. She has a busy career and shoulders the responsibilities the kids should be doing. She's a wonderful mother, but I feel she is becoming a crutch to them. I want the kids to be successful, but I think they are being held back. How do I address this in a positive way? Signed, Lost for Words in Michigan. Dear Lost, sometimes well-meaning parents can do too much for their kids. A positive way to approach this sensitive subject with your wife would be to explain that you want those children to be capable of becoming independent when they are older. To achieve that, they need to learn certain skills now so they can practice them while they are young adults. Many families accomplish this by giving their tweens and teens an allowance in return for taking on certain household chores. It shouldn't stress out your wife to discuss this with you and consider the wisdom of it. Because she is so busy working, it might be helpful if you took the lead on this by broaching the subject with the kids and showing them what they have to gain if they agree.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.